Okay, so Congress passed this massive, massive spending package. I mean, you're talking, this was a budget bill then combined with an economic stimulus package. So you put those two things together, it's a total monstrosity. This thing was nearly 6,000 pages long. You know how long they had to read it, members of Congress, before they voted on it? Several hours from the time that it was actually created and put together till the time that they actually voted on it. So obviously nobody could have read it. Nobody bothered. Nobody would have anyway. I don't care if they had 3 weeks. Six Republicans in the Senate voted against this thing. Guess which six? We will tell you. There's no way to pay for any of this, of course, so we're just going to keep borrowing money, we're just going to keep printing money, just going to keep paying hundreds of billion dollars in interest on all the money that we owe. They loaded this bill up, by the way, with reckless spending that has absolutely nothing to do with COVID. We will get to it. But they know this is what they always do, because look, why is Congress ever passing a bill? They can't agree. They're dysfunctional. They can't agree about anything. They certainly can't agree about a bill to pass, except when there's a government shutdown looming and the media starts having a frenzy and we need to pass this bill. We're up against a deadline. We cannot have a government shutdown. What would happen? National parks would close down. The military would still be intact, by the way. But either way, so they fill it up with everything under the sun, everything including the kitchen sink. What is it, $1.4 trillion? And yet, as a caller reminds me, and I believe me, I remembered it, they cannot pay $5 billion for Trump, for President Trump, to build a wall to protect the border, which, by the way, Joe Biden is going to destroy the border, as we're going to get to coming up. But $5 billion measly dollars, which is a tiny, tiny, minuscule fraction of all the trillions that they spend. But it was for, well, it's just for a border wall. It's just to protect the southern border. Meanwhile, President Trump has to divert military funds and that were earmarked for some other cause in the military and defense spending. And then, of course, the Democrats scream about how Trump, he's taking money away from our defense to build a wall. I mean, hello? What do you think the wall is for? It's for national defense, national security reasons. Meanwhile, in Israel, and so we'll get to all of that coming up. Israel, you know, you somehow knew that Bibi Netanyahu would figure out a way to stay in power. Again, whether he orchestrated it this way or not, we knew that this unity government was not really going to last. Somehow Netanyahu had a year and a half to figure out, and Benny Gantz never actually gets to take power, to take control, to become the prime minister. So it's a unity rotation government. It totally dissolved, totally fell apart, totally crumbled before the second part of the rotation, Benny Gantz was able to actually become prime minister. That turned out to be quite the joke. And Bibi, by the way, is the big winner. They're heading to a fourth round of elections in Israel. You cannot make this stuff up. And meanwhile, Netanyahu, Likud are going to be the big winners here, it looks like, according to the polls. Blue and White and Benny Gantz are basically on the brink of collapse, so we'll get to that coming up. Ilhan Omar has blasted Ocasio-Cortez, and I hate to say it. It's difficult for me to mouth these words. I sort of pretty much agree with Ilhan Omar. Oh, it's hard to say that. Now, look. It's Omar versus Ocasio. So it's like either way you go here, you're not going to win, or you're going to win, or I don't know. But either way, we're going to have to agree with one of them, you would think. But it turned, and Ilhan Omar did not blast Ocasio by name, but that's clearly who she was referencing. She says, how dare these young, healthy people in Congress get the COVID vaccine, and meanwhile, there are elderly people who haven't gotten the vaccine. There are frontline workers who haven't gotten the vaccine, but Ocasio-Cortez at age 31, healthy, and, you know, not at high risk whatsoever, she gets the vaccine. So Ilhan Omar, give her credit, because she's 1,000% right. And what is Ocasio's excuse? Well, I had to do this. It's for national security reasons. I mean, the government is giving us these vaccines because it's for national security purposes. We need to make sure that the government remains intact. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, have you ever heard of a more pathetic, lame, disgraceful excuse? So here's what Omar put out in a tweet. First time I think I've ever agreed with her, probably the last time. She says, we don't have enough vaccines. There's a shortage of supply. We need to prioritize those who need it most. That's why it's disturbing to see members be the first to get the vaccine, while most frontline workers, elderly and infirm in our district, are waiting. And clearly, she's taken a shot at fellow socialist, member of the squad, or as I call it, the cabal, Ocasio-Cortez, who took a video of herself getting the vaccine. And then Omar said it's shameful. She said it's shameful. Lawmakers, Congress, she says it would make sense if it was age, but unfortunately it's of importance and it is shameful. We are not more important than frontline workers, teachers, etc., who make sacrifices every day. Now, Ocasio-Cortez, what was her response? What did she say? How did she defend herself? She said, quote, not everybody, obviously, yet has been vaccinated, but when it, and Ocasio, give her credit, she spelled the word vaccinated correctly. Maybe she used spell check. But when it comes to Congress's access, it's due to something called continuity of government's planning, essentially national security planning. So this actually came from a national security policy and directive to ensure continuity of government during national emergencies. So this is for continuity. So Ocasio-Cortez, she doesn't care about herself. She doesn't care about getting this vaccine to protect herself. She cares about continuity of government. I mean, she's doing this for a higher cause. Now, I understand Mitch McConnell. I understand Nancy Pelosi. I understand Chuck Schumer and Dianne Feinstein, people who are elderly, people who are higher risk. That's one thing. You talk about continuity of government, but Ocasio-Cortez, I mean, are you kidding me? And it's like they take this stuff like with a straight face. I mean, well, and look, I understand the point. And by the way, others joined her. I believe Tulsi Gabbard is not getting the vaccine, even though she technically qualifies. Matt Gaetz, Republican Matt Gaetz, super conservative Trump supporter. He says he's not taking the vaccine until others have the chance to get it. And there is a concept, which I don't want to dismiss that concept totally, because if, you know, there could be a theoretical crisis here. If there are too many people in power who did come down with COVID-19, you know, that could hurt the government. Now, do I believe, let's say, you know, I don't know, a third of Congress were out of commission, not saying anything terrible would happen to them, like I was talking before about the shutdown. Would it really affect our lives? The shutdown, remember that like 35-day shutdown, longest in history, because President Trump refused to cooperate until they gave him his wall, which they didn't give him, and he ended up backing down, but he still did the right thing. Like, did anybody notice? Did anybody care? It affected our lives a drop. Funny, I needed to get through to the IRS very badly. I needed some documents. It had to do with, you know, something related to a house purchase, let's just say that, without getting into too many details. And I couldn't get in contact with the IRS for weeks. I was, you know, sitting here in favor, supporting Trump, shutting down the government. Meanwhile, privately, I was reeling because it was actually, you know, it could have been disastrous. Turned out to be okay. Worked out okay. But anyway, Ocasio-Cortez getting this vaccine before the frontline workers, before people who are in their 80s, it is obscene. It is disgraceful. It is shameful. AG Barr. AG Barr is stepping down. AG Barr, look, he's done a lot of amazing things. He's helped President Trump. He's helped the country in so many ways. I disagree with him about a lot of things, as you know, but he's stepping down. Why is he stepping down? So people believe, well, he's stepping down because President Trump basically threatened to fire him. This is like President Trump punishing him because he's upset they're not doing enough to investigate election fraud. They're not doing enough in Hunter Biden. AG Barr kept the Hunter Biden stuff hidden. Maybe that's the reason, but there is speculation now that the real reason is because there's going to be a special counsel appointed. Maybe two special counsels. And remember, Barr appointed John Durham as special counsel. He's looking into all the corruption surrounding the Russia investigation, the Russia collusion hoax. Peter Strzok, James Comey, McCabe, etc. But AG Barr, he said this week, he says, there's no reason to appoint a special counsel to investigate Hunter Biden. There is no reason to appoint a special counsel to investigate election fraud. That's what Barr said. I'm not saying that. I vehemently disagree, as I'll explain, but that's what Barr is saying. So there is speculation that his deputy, who's taken over, Deputy AG, is taken over in time to be able to appoint a special counsel because President Trump wants the special counsel. A lot of Republicans believe it should happen, as they're correct, as I'll explain. So Barr doesn't want to be the one to do it, so he's stepping aside, giving a chance to the next person to appoint a special counsel for Hunter for the election fraud. Please, please, please let that be true. We don't know. We have to see. So here's what AG Barr said. He said, quote, and the media is so egregious. The media, they keep giving us their opinion, but they report it as fact. The AP, their news stories, quote unquote, news fact, right? It's supposed to be actual objective news. It's anything but that. It's just, it's opinions. It's op-ed. That's what the AP is. It's op-ed. I'll read you in a moment some excerpts. But AG Barr said, quote, I have not seen a reason to appoint a special counsel. I have no plan to do so before I leave. He was talking about Hunter. He was talking about election fraud. And essentially he's saying, well, you know, the investigations are ongoing. They're going to continue. So you don't need a special counsel because why would you need it? You know, why should we think the investigations are not going to continue on their own? And the reason is very simple, because Joe Biden's going to bury the investigations, especially the one into his son Hunter Biden, the two that we know about. Who knows how many they're suppressing? Maybe Hunter Biden's, maybe there's like seven. I don't know. Two. I don't believe I have two. I guess I can't know for sure. I don't think I have two federal criminal investigations against me. So you have the president, incoming president, his son is being investigated. We know all the history. We know all the corruption. You know, we know about Obama and Biden directing, you know, when it came to Michael Flynn. And why don't we use the Logan Act? That was, it turns out, Joe Biden's idea, according to Peter Strzok's own scribbled notes, right? We know about them spying on Trump and spying on Carter Page. Now Carter Page is actually suing James Comey and the Obama DOJ, the Obama FBI. I mean, you're talking about the most corrupt FBI, bar none, in American history under Obama. And now we have the second in command and the man who worked very closely with them because he's suggesting the Logan Act. And then, lo and behold, Michael Flynn gets charged with lying. He was lying in relative to that Logan Act that they were grilling him about, which was Biden's suggestion, and now Biden's going to be the president, but you think that he's not going to bury and suppress an investigation into Hunter? That, by the way, he's been denying any wrongdoing all these years, and who knows if he himself was complicit. So, of course, we need, how can you even question that we need a special counsel? What's Barr talking about? Unless Barr is caving in, succumbing to the pressure, he's done. You know, he's done being, he's been so abused by the media, by the Democrats who accuse him of being Trump's water boy, that he just doesn't want to appoint a special counsel. I don't know. I don't know. And you're going to tell me, and listen to the AP, quote, "A special counsel would make it more difficult for Biden and his yet-to-be-named attorney general to close investigations that were begun under Trump. Such an appointment could also add a false legitimacy to baseless claims." This is an AP news story. "Baseless claims, particularly to the throngs of Trump supporters who believe the election was stolen because Trump keeps wrongly claiming it was." So there's your opinion, right? But it's a news article, but it says baseless claims, okay? It would add false legitimacy, baseless claims, to the throngs of Trump supporters who believe the election was stolen because Trump keeps wrongly claiming. He wrongly claims that it was, and it's baseless claims. I mean, do we have to bring any more evidence? Again, you want to tell me, well, it's not the scale. We don't have evidence of all hundreds of thousands of whatever. I mean, you're talking about so many irregularities, so much corruption. So, I mean, the universal mail-in ballots to begin with, I mean, you know, is like totally, totally ripe for fraud. We know of, I mean, countless hundreds of affidavits, countless, you know, stories, anecdotal evidence, etc. But it's baseless. It's totally baseless because the AP says it's baseless. They stick their head in the sand. I mean, you have so many legitimate people who say that there was so much evidence of fraud here with the election. And now what's the problem, I want to know, A.G. Barr, with the special, what's the downside of appointing a special counsel? What is the downside of appointing a special counsel when you're investigating the son of the incoming president? You're investigating whether the incoming president stole the election. And you, if you don't have a special counsel, what do you think is going to happen when Biden puts in his own AG into power? It's unreal. Think about that, right? So you tell me, well, but special counsels, didn't I say when they appointed Bob Mueller, didn't I say, well, that could lead to problems? They manufacture the crime and they create all sorts of problems. They need to justify their own appointment existence. So they go and basically create crimes out of thin air, which is, by the way, that's exactly what they did, not just to Michael Flynn, to Papadopoulos, to numerous Trump associates. Not Manafort. Manafort did have crimes. Of course, the crimes took place 10 years before Russia collusion, and they had nothing to do with Russia. They were Ukraine. But and Manafort, by the way, was pardoned. President Trump did pardon a number of people, including Jared Kushner's father, including Paul Manafort, Roger Stone. So a bunch of people that President Trump is associated with. By the way, it's common practice. It happens. It even happens when it's not a witch hunt. It even happens when it's not a hoax. And Manafort wasn't a hoax, but Roger Stone was, and many others were. But, you know, the outgoing president, you know, typically does. You know, Paul Manafort kind of benefits because you wonder, you know, President Trump, you would have waited 4 more years to pardon Manafort, you'd have to think. I guess you don't know for sure because maybe Trump was just waiting until after the election. Could there still be state criminal charges brought against Paul Manafort? That's a big legal debate. But right now, he's a free man. But anyway, so under Mueller, the difference is very clear. Mueller, I was against the special counsel because there was no evidence. There was no criminal investigation. But wasn't there an investigation going on against Russia collusion? Yes, but it was a counterintelligence investigation. James Comey admitted under oath that he confirmed to Trump on 3 separate occasions that he was not a target of the investigation before Comey was fired. And then they appointed Bob Mueller. Trump was never a target. It was never a criminal investigation. It was a counterintelligence investigation. In other words, they were investigating Russia for election foreign interference, but they were not investigating the Trump campaign. Were they trying to create dirt, dig up dirt, steal dossier? Oh, yeah, they were desperate for that stuff. And yes, there was the Michael Flynn stuff. Michael Flynn, that was a whole different story. But Trump was never a target of that investigation. But then Trump fires Comey. Rod Rosenstein panics. And, he wanted to save his own skin, Rod Rosenstein. So he appoints Bob Mueller. So they've invented an investigation that never, ever existed. They literally, it was a hoax. It was a hoax. This is not a hoax. Here you have this investigation with Hunter Biden going on for years. You got the laptop. You got an enormous amount of evidence. With the election fraud, you have an enormous amount of evidence. And these things are already being investigated. So it's not like you're making up some kind of new investigation like they did with Bob Mueller just to specifically target Biden and use the special counsel as a weapon. So how could it hurt? How could it hurt? It absolutely could not. With Trump, it was a political thing, a political move. That's all it was. And the proof is Rosenstein. Remember, he tried to invoke the 25th Amendment against Trump. He offered to wear a wire. Rosenstein, who's the man, is the deputy AG appointed by Trump, who, by the way, is the one who wrote the memo to Trump justifying the firing of James Comey. And he says, hey, FBI, I have an idea. I'm going to wear a wire so I can go into Trump's office, get him to say something incriminating, and then we can basically impeach him based on that. I mean, have you ever heard of anything more twisted? Oh, boy. All right, Lindsey. And then Rosenstein stayed on for a really long time, and we were all scratching our house, still never know why. All right, meanwhile, Lindsey Graham, he says that AG Barr and the DOJ is not going far enough in the Hunter Biden scandal. And Lindsey Graham, he's not a radical right winger. We have to read, Lindsey Graham is not Ted Cruz. Lindsey Graham, I believe, voted in favor of this spending bill. That's just one example. There are many. Lindsey Graham's always been considered a moderate. The funny thing is, the only reason, he's like Dershowitz. He stands up for what's right. The left has been so vicious, become so radical, that Lindsey Graham, and Dershowitz is a liberal, he's a Harvard liberal. He lost all of his friends because he actually stood up for the right thing, for justice. Lindsey Graham, he sees how they abuse and destroy Trump, and he's forced to actually defend Trump because it's the right thing to do. But remember who's talking here. So he said, quote, as to Hunter Biden, you have a U.S. attorney in Delaware looking at tax fraud, but he's not looking at his overseas dealings. Hunter Biden's dealings in Ukraine and China, I want somebody to look at all the overseas activity of Hunter Biden, see if this compromised the foreign policy of President Biden, if he gets to be president, and the guy in Delaware does not have that mandate, so I respectfully disagree. He's talking about AG Barr. He disagrees. If it were up to me, I would take the U.S. attorney in Delaware, give him the entire Hunter Biden portfolio so he could look at everything Hunter Biden did, which is pretty massive, industrial-sized influence peddling. I think we need a special counsel because I worry what Hunter Biden did may have compromised our ability to effectively wage foreign policy. I mean, is it not obvious? Is it not a no-brainer? So let's hope that they actually do appoint this special counsel. All right, so a spokesman for Joe Biden has strongly hinted that if he becomes the president, if he's sworn in, that he will basically eliminate and abolish Trump's really, really terrific and successful border policies. I mean, remember the border was a mess? I mean, we would tell you about it. It was more than a mess. They had people coming over in droves, asylum seekers. They were coming with children. They wouldn't let Trump separate the children, so it's a catch and release. You had, basically hundreds of thousands of people crossing the border illegally then remaining in the United States. And yes, it's illegal, but they were seeking asylum because they were given a script. They were told exactly, coached what they needed to say. I am in danger. I am in imminent danger. I'm being persecuted. It's a script. They're coached. They know what to say to be allowed in. And then they never show up. They show up for the first hearing because they know they'll be released. They never show up for another hearing after that. So now so Trump cleaned up the mess by himself because of Remain in Mexico, where he got Mexico. He pressured Mexico to agree to let the asylum seekers stay there. The asylum seekers don't want to stay in Mexico. They're staying in Guatemala. They're staying in Honduras. They don't want to stay in those countries. They want to come to California. They want to come to New York and to, all the sanctuary cities, San Francisco. So anyway, the Biden people are hinting that they are going to reopen the borders. I'm sure that they will. Maybe they won't tear down Trump's wall. Maybe they'll even do that. I wouldn't put it past them. But Trump's amazing policies got the border under control. He did the impossible. Congress threw Trump under the bus. Republicans, Democrats alike, they gave him nothing for the border. And it was a nightmare. The border was a nightmare scenario. The the facilities where they keep these people. I mean, it was just filthy. It was just totally overcrowded. You know, people were living in squalor. And Trump, he cleaned it up by himself with zero help from Congress. And now Biden is basically threatening to abolish all those policies and to allow the asylum seekers back in. Forget remain in Mexico. It's going to be catch and release again. And all those deals that Trump made, all those incredibly successful policies, are going to go down the drain. Let's hope it doesn't happen. But that is Biden. You know, and why is he doing it? He's going to tell you, well, he's doing it because of freedom. He's doing it because these people, they're being persecuted. They need asylum. He's going to come up with all sorts of ridiculous reasons. And you're going to say, well, he's pandering to the Bernie Sanders, Ocasio-Cortez socialist movement. Maybe. Maybe. But I actually really believe it's not at all ideological. I really believe that it's just all about having Democrat voters. They know that they allow these people in, and then their children are citizens, or they eventually gain amnesty or whatever is going to happen, and they become Democrat voters. This is the Democrat strategy for creating millions of Democrat voters. Is there are millions of illegals in the United States right now, anywhere between 20 million, 30 million illegals in the United States. Who do you think they vote for? Who do you think their kids vote for? What do you think they become, Republican or Democrat? So it's really just all a political strategy. That's what I would really believe. But remember, before Trump's policies, it was catch and release. There was asylum seekers, these bogus asylum seekers who lied because they did not qualify for asylum, but they just knew what to say to get in, and then they never come back for their hearings. They bring a child across. They could smuggle a child. They could steal a child. They could rent a child. But that's the jackpot, because legally then they're required to be let in. So the whole thing was a circus. And who lost out the most? The real immigrants who actually wait in line. They're the ones who lose out the most because they don't get allowed in because there are too many illegals flowing across. Sanctuary cities. The people who live there lose out the most, ironically, because they've got gangs and all sorts of drug smugglers, and the Democrats, the open border socialist anti-American pro-drug cartel pro-MS-13 Democrat policies created this mess. And now here comes Joe Biden. He's already been apologizing because Obama deported too many illegal aliens. What does that tell you? He's been saying that for over a year because he knew he needed to say that to get elected. All right, so Congress, right? They only pass bills when they're so dysfunctional, when there's a shutdown that's literally hours away from taking place, from going into effect. So they passed a few different budget bills. President Trump vetoed the defense spending bill. But one of the budget bills that was passed by Congress this week is actually going to cut funding to ICE by $107 billion. So we talk about cutting spending. This is where they're cutting spending. And this is, by the way, you know, President Trump will likely sign this into law. And I don't know how he justifies it, but, you know, cutting funding to ICE by $107 billion. And by the way, it gives millions of dollars to the Palestinians. In this bill, in one of these budget bills, there is $250 million that goes toward a Palestinian cause. It's technically some kind of like cause that's supposed to advance a two-state solution. So it's like some kind of fund that is supposed to advance peace between Israel and the Palestinians. It's supposed to advance a two-state solution. You know, some nonsense like that where technically it's not going directly into the pockets of Palestinians, but it is. It's going, at least a lot of that money out of that $250 million is going to go into the hands of the Palestinians one way or another. And I'm sure it's going to be used to fund terror one way or another. That always happens. So meanwhile, this bill, the big budget bill, nearly 6,000 page bill, nearly 6,000 pages. It's a monstrosity. I mean, and it's just loaded with this garbage spending, loaded with just obscene, astronomical spending that we simply cannot afford. And they only had a few hours to read it. And six Republicans voted against it, as we're going to get to. So Ted Cruz, he railed against this. He's one of the six Republicans, of course. And spoiler alert, Rand Paul is one of the six Republicans who voted against it. Mike Lee is as well. We'll get to it. So Ted Cruz blasted this bill. He said it failed to make any meaningful spending cuts. It advanced the interests of the radical left, special interests, and swamp lobbyists, with funding going towards expanding authority for more H-2B visas for foreign workers while a near record number of Americans remain unemployed, as well as laying the groundwork for Democrats to implement the Green New Deal by claiming a need to meet the power demand in the United States through clean, renewable, or zero-emission energy sources. Cruz said that Democrats exploited the need for relief to advance their political agenda instead of working on legislation that puts our nation on the path to recovery. Now, in addition to Cruz, Senator Rand Paul, Senator Mike Lee of Utah voted against it. Senator Rick Scott of Florida, good for him. Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee. Senator Ron Johnson. So there are like the only six true conservatives left in the Senate right there. And we've known that for a very long time. And they actually had the courage to vote against this bill. But every other Republican in the Senate voted in favor of this bill. Rand Paul blasted his fellow Republicans. He said, quote, "Maybe these new free money Republicans should join the Everybody Gets a Guaranteed Income Caucus. Why not $20,000 a year for everybody? Why not $30,000 a year? If we can print up money with impunity, why not do it? The Treasury can just keep printing the money. That is until someone points out that the emperor has no clothes and that the dollar no longer has value." That's Rand Paul. He's 1,000% right. We've been talking about this forever. And look, it doesn't matter because we've pretty much lost the battle because Republicans and Democrats alike, the one thing they all seem to enjoy is spending, except for these few who actually have the courage to speak out against it. Well, but it's COVID. But we need stimulus. The economy was in a major recession. So many people are out of work, so many businesses, etc. You know what? That would be fine if COVID was really the excuse. That would be totally fine if this was a one-time thing. We've told you about, the budget has been between $3.5 and $4 trillion. Half of the budget, half the federal budget is on HHS. It's Health and Human Services. So we're talking Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid programs, food stamps, all those welfare programs. It's half the budget. You're talking about, and it's just like, it's endless spending. It just, because it keeps, money just keeps coming in and going out, I should say. The money, the expenses, in other words, they just keep on, there's like no cap to like Medicaid. So just, they qualify, okay, we got to figure out a way to pay the money. Social Security, that fund depleted years ago. Well, we just have to borrow it from somewhere else. Borrow, spend, borrow, spend, borrow, spend. We were $25 trillion in debt. $25 trillion before COVID. There was like a $1 trillion deficit, essentially, before COVID. Before, it was like a $4 trillion budget, and we're only bringing in $3 trillion. And don't tell me Trump tax cuts, because the revenue has gone up every year since Trump cut taxes. Tax revenue has gone up. Because, very simply, because business was booming, economy was booming, people were making more money than ever. Thanks to President Trump's tax cuts, the income tax revenue, they told us it was going to go down because of Trump's tax cuts. It went up. It always goes up, pretty much, when they cut the right taxes, especially corporate taxes. That money goes back in Americans' pockets. So all this, the spending addiction, the spending frenzy is something which has been going on for many, many, many years. It has nothing to do with COVID. Don't fall for it when they try to blame it on that. Meanwhile, President Trump demanded that Congress change the stimulus money. The stimulus money is now, remember, it was $1,200 per adult the first time around, the stimulus package, COVID stimulus, and it was like $600 per child, right? $500 to $600 per child. I believe maybe $500 per child, $1,200 per adult, and this one is like $600 per person, adult or child. President Trump says it's not enough. He says he demands that Congress change it to $2,000 per adult, and I guess remain $600 per child. And it's a brilliant strategy by President Trump because, like, what are they going to, what's Congress going to say? No, we don't want to make it $2,000 a person. Well, you're going to say, well, and here's where you're going to say, well, you know, we have to stop somewhere. Like, why? Rand Paul is 100% right. We cannot afford any of this. We cannot afford it. But, like, once you're spending it, how does anyone just, oh, we're borrowing the money, we're going to print more money? Well, but we can only stop at $600 per person, but $1,000 per person, $1,200 per person, $2,000 per person. So Rand Paul says, let's just make it $20,000 per person. Let's just make it UBI, universal basic income, because the left has won. And Trump is kind of almost using that logic to turn it against the Democrats and say, I'm not accepting this bill. You're not giving people enough money. Now, who's going to complain? The people who, like me and you, who say, this is outrageous. Just stop giving out, writing these blank checks. Right? We're against it no matter what. But is it $600, $2,000? That's what makes the difference? Of course not. So Trump is basically trying to make Congress look like they don't really care about people, and he's the only one who cares. He's fighting for the little guy, you know. So let's see how Congress responds now. Meanwhile, Ocasio-Cortez, she complained that she didn't have enough time to read this bill. She's right. But guess what? Then she did. She voted in favor of the bill. Oh, you know what? We don't have enough time. They're giving us this massive bill. They're not giving us enough time to read this thing. Only a few hours. I can't read. I mean, Ocasio-Cortez, I'm not sure if she could read a children's book in a few hours. But either way, she can read. She can spell the word vaccine. That she has no problem with. But, she complained, and then she voted in favor of the bill. Can you explain that to me? Here's a tweet from Ocasio. Quote, Congress needs time to actually read this package before voting on it. Members of Congress have not read this bill. No kidding. It's over 5,000 pages. It arrived 2 p.m. today. We're told to expect to vote on it in 2 hours. This is not governance. It's hostage taking. The public needs to see these bills with enough time to contact their representatives to let them know how they feel. Members are reeling right now because they don't have time to consult with their community. She voted in favor of the bill! All right, Israel is heading to new elections. Each side, basically, the Knesset dissolves. It automatically dissolves. If they cannot agree on a budget, the entire Knesset, the entire Israeli parliament, just dissolves if they don't meet a certain deadline, and that's what happened. Imagine if that happened to the United States. Imagine if Congress would just dissolve and start over again every time they couldn't agree on a budget. Oh, that would just be quite pleasant, if you ask me. Anyway, so the big winner here is going to be Bibi Netanyahu. They're declaring him the loser and saying how he has challenges. They say this every time. He's like the longest-serving prime minister in Israeli history. Every time there's an election, or every time he gets challenged, this is it. You know, can he withstand this? Is he finally done? I mean, come on. Yeah, I mean, he's the most popular. I mean, look at all these deals that have been made. You know, look at Iran. I mean, Iran is in major, major trouble. And thanks to Netanyahu and thanks to President Trump. I mean, look at that scientist, that assassination. I mean, look at the deals with Bahrain and with the UAE and with, I don't have to go, we can go on and on here. I don't have to tell you, I mean, how popular Netanyahu is for very good reason, because he has turned Israel into like this, really world leader in economics, military, defense, etc. I mean, the Israel is like literally a world superpower, thanks to one man. Thanks to a lot of things, but thanks to Bibi Netanyahu. So anyway, meanwhile, blue and white, they have abysmal poll numbers. That is Benny Gantz. So he's the real loser here, because his power, he didn't have power to begin with. He was just like supposed to have power eventually. That's not happening, so he's done, and he's done before he ever really started. He was, by the way, he was sidelined. All these major deals that were made, the Trump, of course, had his deal of the century. Gantz was, he was part of that, but he was really on the sideline. And then, of course, all these deals that are now being brokered with all these Arab countries. So the unity government, I mean, really, Netanyahu, again, whether it was planned this way or not, it just worked out. It was just another way for Bibi Netanyahu to remain in power and keep things going a little bit longer. And maybe he'll still avoid indictments. Meanwhile, Iran, we'll keep an eye on that, of course. I guess those elections are scheduled for March 23rd. Iran has attacked the U.S. embassy in Iraq. This happened on Sunday, and President Trump actually tweeted about it today. He tweeted a picture of rockets fired at the U.S. embassy in Baghdad that happened on Sunday. And he blamed Iran for the airstrike. No shock there. And he threatened Iran, Trump. And we've got a few weeks left. Why would the Iranians, kind of be like inciting a reaction here from President Trump, baiting President Trump? What are they? He's on his way out, presumably. So wouldn't you think it would be the perfect chance for him to attack and retaliate? I don't know. But here's a tweet from President Trump. Quote, our embassy in Baghdad got hit Sunday by several rockets. Three rockets failed to launch. Guess where they were from? Iran. Now we hear chatter of additional attacks against Americans in Iraq. Some friendly health advice to Iran. If one American is killed, I will hold Iran responsible. Think it over. So we'll keep an eye on that situation and everything else that's going on. That's going to do it on this very busy day. And we will see you next time.